year ago or so, Reb asked the priest to each of us to come up with some particular thesis that we would deliver to the other priests and over the year. And I chose to look at the, I thought at that time when we were discussing it, that the 12-fold chain of causation, interesting because it talked about samsara and how we psychologically build the world in a way that was remindful of this old cosmology of how we do the same thing. That is to say, how we structure our life in such a way that our attitudes and our response by tendency to the force of our experience makes up our existence. So I've been thinking about it and trying to come up with something. Of course, it's such a vast subject that there's not much I can. Tonight is really just an introduction to some of this inquiry that I have struggled with over the last year. And I don't know how many of you, some of you are probably astrologers or have studied astrology, but maybe most of you haven't. So I'll start by saying something about the fact that I feel very disturbed that astrology has fallen into such disrepute that it has become a matter of kind of pop. You know, the horoscope in the paper, what is your sun sign? I'm a this, I'm a that. I would like to, I would hope by talking about it a little bit tonight to restore it to some of its original dignity. Because it is a subject that I think has some value to us, even though we must keep in mind certain points. One is that astrology is usually approached from the point of view of personality. And that is to say, the subject as something solid. But I would like to approach it as personality, but not as something solid, but as something that exists as phenomenology on the ground of emptiness. Now, before I start, and what I would like to do is actually suggest something. Maybe I'd like to make a couple requests. One is that my way of presenting things is bringing some myth and some philosophy and some personal insight, some psychology and so on. Kind of a grab bag of many things. And I kind of create it as I go along. That is to say, I actually have to discover what astrology is every time I do it, to bring out its living quality. So my suggestion to you is tonight is to forget your notes. It's fine if you want to take them, but just relax and don't try to understand or grab at anything I say. But let it be entertainment. I kind of regret that you have to have astrology thrown at you when you have all these other subjects too. But we have all these other things to think about and dwell on. I want this to be loose and easy and kind of fun. Well, long before Kepler and Newton, who were astrologers, back before Pythagoras, and back to the ancient civilizations of, we go back for 1,000 years, of men, of human beings, trying to understand being or existence in terms of otherness, in terms of a larger system. And so in that sense, this cosmology touches in the question of ontology, brings in phenomenology. There's a lot of different ways of approaching it. I should maybe start by making just some kind of general philosophical statements. Use this as my lecture. I can lean on it. My hands don't shake so much. It's no secret to us that nothing in existence, no being in existence, exists apart from anything else. That a thing comes into being in relationship to everything else in the universe. So that there's a system here, you might say, in which each thing is at one and the same time the center of everything else and the periphery of everything else. Or each thing is the master and the servant at the same time. So that from an egocentric or from an ego point of view, the world revolves around me. From the point of view of the globe that we live on, the earth, the solar system seems to revolve around us. In this sense, each thing is itself on its own home ground in not being itself. In that, in not being itself, I mean that that its own home ground is the home ground of everything else. And that the home ground of everything else, as servant, makes up the being of each thing. That's clear to us in our studies so far, I think, of Buddhism, of the interdependency of all relationship in the universe. Astrology has always had that same point of view. It's just that the difference in astrology, and I think the mistake, the usual approach is to make personality into something solid, and ego into something solid. But actually, we could look, as we shall tonight, at the circle of the so-called zodiac as another wheel of samsara, in which, as I'm saying, trying to present here, that this is a system in which this interdependency, each thing feeds every other thing, that by virtue of my being on my own home ground, or each thing being on its own home ground, it supports everything else is being on its own home ground. So, this idea of egocentricity, or being the center of something, of course, is usually shown in terms of a center of a circle around it. That could stand for me, or you, or any center of everything else. Of course, on the field of shunyata, or the void, you can't use a circle because the center is everywhere and the circumference nowhere. But in terms of trying to understand the self in relationship to everything else, it's helpful to use this circle and see things in terms of cycles and rhythms. Actually, astrology is a study of cycle and rhythm. And this cycle of these rhythms and cycles are something that are so essential, or so, what should I say, so basic in our psychology that we don't even realize it. And that I'm talking about natural phenomena. I'm talking about the cycles of the daily turning of the earth on its axis in relationship to the sun, so that we have night and day. I'm talking about the monthly cycle, in which we notice the moon waxing and waning in 27 and a half days. And I'm talking about the yearly cycle, in which the earth and the planets circle the sun, or seemingly those planets and the sun and the moon turn about ourselves. So that everything is continually in motion. Though we talk about a kind of fixed position, Aquarius and Leo and so on, we're talking about only a particular tendency or point of view toward the whole. And it's important to keep that in mind, because when I talk tonight about Aquarius or Leo or Aries, I'm not talking about you or me. I'm talking about a process, at this point at least. That's about as far as I can go with it tonight. So that this also could stand for, this is also a symbol for the sun in astrology. It's written like this. And the moon, the new moon, you see. And that this dynamic of beginning, growth, maturation, decline, and extinction endlessly, monthly, daily, yearly, is the basis for, at least psychologically speaking, of all of our, I think, of all of our perceptions of impermanence. We see that, of course, the ancients who worshipped, you see, the sun and the moon, and the early religions, the religious experience was based on the fact that these things came and went, and that in time they were turned into deities. And those who sang of those deities became the priests and the singers. And so it's a kind of very deep part of our experience. Now, psychologically, what we're really dealing with here is the transition from darkness to light and back to darkness again. Darkness, kind of the background of primitive light and darkness in our psychology is an essential point in understanding what we're going to look at here. When I heard about the 12-fold chain of causation, I thought it's always interesting that we have 12. I think almost everybody knows why this 12, the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 labors of Hercules, the 12-step program. Why 12, you know? Well, of course, because we have in the solar year 12 months, which are actually 12 moons. In the solar year, we have 12 plus a third lunation cycles. And I might make this bigger. So I'm talking about signs. We're talking about a phenomenon in which, oh dear.
It's a bit,
yeah. This phenomenon of in the Northern Hemisphere, you see, astrology was actually developed in the Northern Temperate regions of the Northern Hemisphere, in the old cultures. And that we tried to understand by the rhythms of the yearly cycle and the monthly cycles and so on, some sort of order in this growth, this pattern of change, this constant becoming and changing. And so the four points of perceptible change in the Northern Hemisphere are, of course, what we call the equinoxes and the solstices. That is to say, the point in which, as seen from the Earth, the sun is at its highest point in the sky, which would be the summer solstice, at its lowest point, when night is the longest and day is the shortest. And those two points of minimum declination, when, of course, the day force, the night force, are exactly equal. Now, this can be shown in a number of ways, but right now we show the year or the 12 steps sequentially as a series. because in some sense that's how we experience the seasons in our life. But actually, we should keep in mind always that this 12-fold chain is happening all the time, very rapidly. Can be extrapolated, you might say, from the yearly 12 steps of change. Now, by maximum declination, I mean that during the winter and summer solstices, day and night change very, very slowly. That is to say, it takes about, let's say maybe 4 minutes over 10 days or 9 days the slow change from dark into light or light into dark, whereas at the equinoxes, the change is very quickly, very quick. This dynamic is important in understanding what astrology purports to say about our psychological changes. You can start in a circle, of course, any place. You could start, in fact, some calendars and some civilizations started with the winter solstice. But most systems, most astrological systems, start with the spring equinox, which is that the night force, the force of darkness, which in some sense stands for our unconscious, for what cannot be seen, for what cannot be known, for our fear of the unknown. All of those deeply ingrained, complexes, this primordial stuff in us, that why we're still afraid of the dark, for example, this feeling of coming out into the light is kind of the backbone of understanding astrology. Some modern astrologers even call it the night force and the day force. The night force representing the collective impulse of bringing people together, and the day force of individuating and sending people out. So that, if we, let's see if I could divide it to 12 moons, 30 degrees each, which is to say, 30 turns of the earth. Each cycle is a turn, doing the same thing in one day that the moon does in a month, or the earth does in 1 year. So that we're continually going through this relationship of light and dark, coming out and going back, on and off. Now I see it, now I don't. Now it appears, and now it's disappearing. I don't know if this is making any sense. So, of course, springtime in the Northern Hemisphere, the time when the so-called night force of darkness is receding and the day force of brightness is bringing us out. Everything is growing. Everything is sprouting. There's a new beginning, a sense of something starting. This, I'd say 30 degrees, actually, these points are always the same. I might just say one kind of technical thing. 2000, about the time of Christ, the point, the so-called line on the earth where day and night became measured exactly equal was in Egypt, exactly where the Sphinx is. But because of a phenomenon called the precession of the equinoxes, which I won't even bother getting into tonight, it keeps receding about 1 degree every 70 years. So that about every 2,500 years, it recedes into another sign. That's why they talk about just entering the age of Aquarius now. Right now, it's at Greenwich, where day and night is measured as being exactly equal at a certain time. And everything is measured from that point. It has nothing to do with the constellations anymore whatsoever. It's a point in which, from that beginning, so-called, everything is measured in 360 degrees. But because the day is a little less than 1 degree, about 57 minutes and something, a little less than 1 degree, we have 365 days, 5 hours and 24 minutes in a solar year. In the 360, in other words, 365 complete turns of light and darkness in 360 degrees. We go through that. That's also why your birthday is important. It's another time of making that whole turn, coming around, going through all of these changes, all of these attitudes, all of these responses, different responses to the force of light and darkness balancing one over the other. So, of course, this first sign of springtime is expressed by, you know, here's where we move into out of phenomenology now into something else, into abstraction. But the glyph for that is the sense of something sprouting in the beginning. Aries, we call it Aries. The first 30 degrees of which day and night, the day force of so-called individuating process of personality begins to really come out. It's like saying, like a fool in the Tarot, taking its first step and saying, I'm here. Whew, a new day. You know, you come out of your cave, it's been winter, everything's sprouting, it's springtime. So Aries is called fire. Now, just like we have Nama Rupa in Buddhism, name and form. The form in all of the old, it has fire, earth, air, and water. So in all the old astrologies, fire, earth, air, and water universally is considered the four essential elements of life. Fire, of course, because of the sun. Without that, there's nothing else. So the first quality is the first element, fire, that is to say, spontaneity and spirit, as the first impulse toward the individuating process. Now, I talk about individuating, you know, the old astrologies only talked universally when they talked about in terms of their king or their whole culture. But modern society, that is in the last 200 years, well, even since the Middle Ages, I think, has begun to see each individual as being an expression of this whole process. So the element of fire, and also these are called cardinal signs, that is to say the equinoxes, they're the turning signs or the so-called initiating signs, the turning points on the wheel in which this change is the most noticeable. So Aries, you could say, is the feeling of newness, of speed and aggression toward some goal. Action for the sake of action. Energy for the sake of energy. Now, I'm not talking about you as Aries. I'm talking about, because each person is much more elaborate and complex organism than what I'm presenting here. But this is one way of looking at how we make the world, how we make samsara. In fact, when I reach for something, when I take any action, that's Aryan. I gotta do something. I gotta start something. In the beginning was the spirit, they say. Now I'm gonna have to move fairly fast to go through all 12 signs then. So I can't talk a lot about each sign. But keep in mind that fire is always spontaneity. And it's always plus. Its energy is to do that. In fact, the positive signs is to do that, and the so-called negative or yin sign is this. That's the pulse of life. To externalize and to internalize, to externalize, to internalize, and so on. Self and other, major dualities. this, of course, happens around March 21st, coming up to it. You can feel it almost on us. The next sign, the next step, following equinoxes, there is a stabilizing force. That is to say, what goes out now stabilizes, takes root. In the beginning was a spirit, and the spirit became flesh, so to speak. It found ground. It has to have, we have the ground to stand on, something, some form in which to operate. It's not just zapping around in space, it's actually having structure. That's Earth. And that is symbolized by this glyph, which is a whole circle and a half moon turned up to receive. This is called fixed energy. But after cardinal, there is a sense of intensification or centralizing of power and energy focused into some particular thing, some practical activity. The plant takes root. You might say that that is dynamic and this is organic. I have a body. The body must be fed. It must be sustained. It is the world itself. It is the earth that from which we have sprouted, from which we have grown. It's interesting to note that, at least in the southern traditions of Buddhism, Buddha is born under the sign of Taurus. And when he supposedly was tempted by Mara about what his realization was, he pointed to the earth. In some sense, it was not God anymore as just spirit, but as rooted in a body, in mortality, in earthiness, in the mother itself, herself. These are called personal signs, by the way. I have a spirit, I have a body. The thing has a spirit and a body. You see, there's so many ways of looking at this. You know, this whole process can be seen as from science as natural causality, or here is mythical poetic. It might be seen philosophically too as something like the absolute one. So many ways of approaching this. The next 30 degrees on the zodiac.
That sign? The name of the
Taurus. Can you read it?
Yeah.
Taurus the bull. The bull is a symbol of energy, of focused energy and earthiness and strength, but animal. It focuses what is right in front of it. It might have some, I'm not talking about you if you're Taurus. You see, the day force is growing now, but behind it is the night force. So unconsciously in the Taurian energy is the feeling of the background of darkness. Some unconscious impulse pushing it out more into the light. The next sign. I don't know if that's enough. Maybe it is. Somebody have a watch?
Yeah.
Maybe I could have a watch. The next sign is called air. Sign and mutable. So we have four elements with three modalities. Cardinal, which is establishing something or initiating something, the equinoxes and solstices. That energy is fixed and given focus. And then the third modality, as mutable, means that it is then dispersed. The mutable always precedes the next change, which would be the solstice, preparing In other words, this is plus, this is minus, this is plus, minus, and so on, all the way around. Boom, 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 boom. Now the day force is really coming into its own. After spirit and body comes mind. That is to say, duality is born. This is the meaning of the glyph of Gemini. The sense of separation. The sense in human beings of conceptualization, of naming things. And by giving them name, giving them value through words and language. From the moment we are born, as an Aries crying out, I'm here, crawling around and finding out we have a body, and then finally understanding the world in terms of name, is expressed this segment by Aries. This attitude, in other words,
Gemini.
Another way of looking at this is looking at these as attitudes, as a way of responding to the force of experience in a particular way. We haven't talked about planets, but each time I'm talking about this, it's as if the sun was expressing itself, as if the self in the center, as the master of everything else, is expressing itself through this mode of being. Does it make any sense?
Yeah.
Here, the idea is that I understand the world by linking up with everything else. In my immediate personal environment, I give it a name. I don't have any particular values yet on that. That will come in later. So we see everything exists in each of the signs, but we're looking at these sequentially. We're breaking it down piecemeal to try to understand the parts so that we can grasp the whole more clearly. So Gemini finds its separate self, since the self finds its separateness growing now, its individuating process, becoming more and more sophisticated. Now I have a name. This is a chair. Oh, it's called a chair. Not only is it a chair, but it's a hard chair. It's maybe even a good chair, a bad chair. Some values are attached to it. Expressing the world through concept. Here poetry is born. Here understanding life in terms of values derived from naming it. So, mutable energy, positive energy before we come to the next sign of linking up disparate things in the immediate environment, understanding them, and focusing that understanding on myself. Whitman is a Gemini, writes Song of Myself. I'm celebrating myself yet in this. According to astrology, the first four signs are what the individual needs to become what a person is before it elaborates into the social and universal. And now on our wheel of samsara, we come to the summer solstice. Now the day force has reached its maximum. The sun is right overhead in the northern hemisphere. Day is long and night is short. The collective force of the night is ebbed, and the individuating force of the day is at its maximum intensity. This is one of the most important signs to understand, I think, to understand the whole that we're speaking of. Because in some sense, Cancer is where, before the sun begins to turn back, it sets the limit of growth. In a sense, the spirit, body, and mind has to have a place where it can grow. It has to have a home, a tradition, a family. It has to come from somewhere. It has to be nurtured and taken care of. We have to have a nest. It's our nesting instinct. So Cancer is a water sign, which has to do with feelings and emotions, the feeling that derives from linking up with mother, the nurturing father, home base, country, fatherland, motherland, the group, the nest, the all of these are instincts for survival. And everything that follows in this sequence is in that each thing is dependent on the other, of course. It has a lot to do with what occurs, of course, in the home, in the home base, expressed by the. This glyph you see is turned in on itself. Huh? Some people say it's nebulae, or the crab's feet turned in. The crab is an interesting symbol for Cancer, because the crab, you see, has a hard shell on the outside. It sets a limit. Keeps the world, you know, the limit is set by the fact that the sun is about to turn back now. So, I don't want to go forward. I want to hang on to what I want. I want to belong to a group. I want to belong somewhere. I want to nurture and be nurtured, and I don't want to leave it. So wherever Cancer falls in our charts, in a sense, is where this nesting instinct in us is very strong. Like you could say that Zen Center, in some senses, that part of any group that the parts belong to a whole is Cancer in you. The Costa Nostra, my family. See, the shell, however, on the crab has to finally be shucked off and a new cell grown. You can't protect its tenderness, its underside, so the psychology of the Cancerian person is the one in the Cancerian development in the person. To want to belong to somewhere and not to allow anything else in. Well, this is a turning point, of course. And now we've come to the next sign, which is fire again. So we come 120 days, you might say, in springtime, or 120 degrees, which actually, if you look at the law at 120 degrees, they make it echo of that triangle. So the next fire, we're going to repeat again, fire, earth, air, and water. But now the idea is that having formed some individual sense of myself, I'm ready to step out into the world and say, hi, I want to present myself in some dramatic fashion. By some sort of creative self-expression. This is Leo. The first of the social signs. Just as Aries is the beginning of the personal development, Leo stands for where we begin to step out into the world and present ourselves no longer just action for its own sake, but action that involves the greater whole. And yet because it's the first sign, is a very tentative stepping out. Even though it's fire, which is extremely expressive, it's also fire that is fixed. And it is associated with the sun. It's the hottest time of summer. It pours down overhead. And the sun stands for the heart of things, doesn't it? I mean, as I said, the sun in our solar system is the thing around which everything revolves, in our life around which everything revolves. In a sense, the Leo personality, or that part of our personality, is stepping out and presenting ourselves to the world and dramatizing our event, our self. Now that can be through children, that can be through creative self-expression of some sort, art. The important thing here is to gain recognition and applause, and to draw magnetically other people into, other beings into the charm circle. That's why it's associated with the king and the magnetic power of spirit. Here, love, the feeling of romantic love is born. I want to, and also I want to enjoy myself with people. So not only is it creative self-expression, but it's recreation or recreation, the enjoyment of being. But it exteriorizes, you see, here we exteriorize our need for approval by the group. Here the being pulled forward now into the greater collective begins to take hold. Next time. Is this working? Leo. Said to be the lion's mane with its pride and its dignity. So tentative yet, and so sensitive. So willing to pour out all of its energy if only you will shut it back. It's also said to be a picture of a male phallus. Maybe. Anyway, it's an interesting glyph because when you draw it, it's just one hit where the others are posted in dual. Now, none of this has any substance, remember. This is just attitude. My standing up here right now doing this is a Leo thing, in the sense I'm trying to present this and myself dramatically. You're learning it. Presenting it is this. We all have bodies, of course, and the whole spirit of the thing is to initiate. So all of these things are operable in any situation at any moment. But we're looking at these things sequentially as having their original meaning in the unfolding of the seasons. Seasons of our lives, a time for a place for everything under the sun, an expression thereof. Now, social expression is just the beginning. We have to learn how to do things. We have to actually, it's not enough just to present ourselves and gain approval. No matter how much we love the world, we have to learn how to take care of it, ourselves, how to operate in it, how to put ourselves in a sense of apprenticeship, how to practice our lives. The next is, of course, the next with Earth always follows. Practical. We're back to Earth now with Virgo. The sign of apprenticeship, of work and service, where, as I say, we begin to use discriminating mind to separate out what is useful and what is not, to put ourselves in a position of learning how to do things. Now, it's often shown as the virgin holding wheat. It's a time of year, you know, when the winnowing process is happening, when you're separating the chaff from the grain. In Virgo, you could say our practice is a Virgonian style. The idea of purifying, of separating out, you see, we're moving up toward this, just before we get to the next point, the halfway point around our circle, there's a need now to clear away the ground, as it were, to separate out what is no longer useful, to learn craftsmanship, to learn how to make things work. So this can have to do with our health, it can have to do with you know, making chairs, making the physical things in our world. It also has to do with the whatever, you know, as each thing falls sequentially, whatever excesses were created in Leo are paid for in Virgo. By our health, by the fact that instead of being the Lord and Master in Leo, we have to learn how to be the servant. It's a critical position because Virgo is just as Leo is self-expressive, Virgo is self-critical. Deeply critical in a sense of discriminating mind. And now we come to the next. Is that enough for Virgo? Maybe it has to be. Now we come to the autumn equinox. 180 days, 180 degrees, halfway across the circle. The sun is going down. The double line, of course, that's also called the scale. I'll come back to that. But the double line here, in many of these double sides, indicates that there's always a dark side, an enlightened side, and an erotic side to all of these different attitudes or stances. These are the circumstances, let's say, in our life. We stand where position we take. Of course, Libra is an air sign. Air has to do with, again, conceptual. Or, you know, air covers everything. Just as water does, but water, you know, water, earth and water go down, air and fire. This way. Now the night forces, the day and night are equal, but now the night force is really gaining strength. Now cooperation. So here you kind of consecrate yourself to otherness, to reaching across and understanding that my survival, my ground, very much depends on yours. Here's where is born the idea of harmony and balance in our life, or those moments in our psychology when everything in this equilibrium, turning now one way and now another, seems to, just that moment when, God, it all seems to be so perfect. I feel this harmonious, this equalization. But at the same time, in Libra, is a great sensitivity born of imbalance. So the Libran psychological tendency is always to redress any imbalance. You might say the devil's advocate is born here, taking the other side, looking at the other side of the equation. Fair play and equal sharing is the hallmark of the Leo psychology. Also, of course, the idea of grace and harmony and beauty translated out of social activity into things themselves. So the idea of that in art and the things of the world itself. And now we're moving, day and night are now moving very rapidly. You know, the declination, there's no declination, it's zero degree. So days and nights are changing very quickly, autumn and fall equinoxes, the autumn and spring equinoxes, as I said. There is a feeling now of being drawn in to the greater collective whole, the greater so-called night force is coming on. It's the time next when the frost is on the pumpkin. Things are freezing up. Everything turns deep into itself. It goes underground, as it were. There's a sense that maybe, after all, this thing that was born, so to speak, born back here and growing all the way through this, through partnership with the world and so on, not only has to be given up, but the person of death enters the picture. Next is Scorpio. Unlike Virgo, which is the virgin turned in and purifying in itself, here this part of the glyph turns out. This is the sting of death. What is this sting of death? Scorpio is one of the most misunderstood of all the signs in the zodiac. Has been a popular lexicon of bad reputation. Very unfair. Very untrue. To single out poor Scorpio for being the bad guy, because it happens to be the time when the question of death comes around. Now, what is this death? Just as I have a body, here, the opposite sign is that body can die. It's also the result, just as Taurus, in a sense, is what Aries needs to sustain itself. So out of my bonding with the world, all of those things, all of the power that is derived from group activity presents itself. But this is power on a very deep and psychic level, because it's water. Fixed water. No. See, after Aries, after again the initiating sign, it has to fix itself, but now this time it fixes itself in terms of intense emotion. Aries, all of the water signs, Cancer and Scorpio, are those places in our lives where deeply we know that we have to let go. Here we have to let go of our home, of our personal identity, and Scorpio is letting go of the more narrow social sense of ourself, so that the next step can be born, so that we can become more absorbed in the more universal aspect of ourselves. Now, because Scorpio is a water sign, a psychic sign, this intense power means that it's very susceptible. Our psychology here is very susceptible to what we might, in another time, 20 years ago, call the group vibe, kind of the undercurrent of things. So that very often Scorpio is the sign that acts out for good or bad what the group at large is not quite ready to present. It's kind of the dark side of the group in that sense. Of course, it is associated with sex. But not sex in the Taurian sense of just procreation. Sex in the sense of transcendence. Sex in the sense of two people coming together and losing themselves in an experience of togetherness. So you might say the tantric aspects of religious practice, often presented as male-female in embrace, is a Scorpio picture. It's a picture of yin and yang embraced in oneness, in intense losing the self in the greater whole. It's a sign of, like all fixed signs, of enormous power, for good or for bad. So oftentimes Scorpios, and if the society is really, you know, violent society, the Scorpios very often act out that violence. If it's a very loving society, they'll very much act out that. All the water signs do this. The water in us, so to speak, that emotional place in us, in our samsaric travel around the wheel, which we make solid The fixed signs really intensify the feeling of solidity as ego. But there are the signs which, if you look at the Sphinx, or you might have seen this before, there's the bull, there's the lion, there's the eagle, that's another, or the phoenix, that's another scorpionic symbol of right of being destroyed and then rising from its ashes and starting again. And of course, when we get to Aquarius, the man, the human. They were called the four doors of the avatars in one society, meaning that in the intense places of ourselves where we focus or feel focused by the collective unconsciously, we have to take a step forward. If we don't take a step forward, we die. This life and death process going on all the time is exemplified, particularly in Scorpio. Life and death in life. You'll often find Scorpio people actually working a lot with dead and dying, the dead and the dying. So, running along here. We now come to when the night force is really gaining ascendancy. And we come to the third of the last of the fire signs, Sagittarius. Picture of an arrow 45 degrees about, crossing the horizon. The beginning of, you see, at Scorpio, it's a place where we're releasing, letting go of the narrow social sense so that the universal consciousness, the dawn of the new, can come forward. And Sagittarius, of course, is also often depicted as a centaur, half horse, half man, this bow and arrow. That horse symbolizes, of course, not the kind of fixed stolidity of Taurus focused on one particular area, but power tamed and used for a purpose. The earth itself used for a purpose, managed. But it's a fire sign, and it's a mutable sign. And remember, mutables have to do with, if this is, remember, initiating, fixed, mutables are beep, 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 scattering energy, bringing it out. Sagittarius is the sign in this par excellence where we take our energy out, our ideas now out into the world. It's now 180 degrees opposite from Gemini. You see, finally we have to talk about Gemini, Sagittarius, Aries, Libra, Cancer, Capricorn, Leo, Aquarius, and so on, as complementary opposites of one process. So if I'm formulating in Gemini, in duality, concepts and ideas, in Sagittarius, those concepts and ideas are codified, made into laws, spread out as values for society at large. Law, codes of conduct, preaching,
precepts.
The Sagittarian psychology is no longer personal. It is much more interested in values on a universal scale. Judgment comes into play. Travel, expanding the horizon. Each time when we move through here, you could say that we begin like this, and by the time we fill in the circle, by the time you get to Sagittarius, it's almost filled up with otherness. Because it's fire, it's restless. It's a part of ourselves that, expressed by this glyph, wants to take in and include everything. Staying in one place is difficult because if I can't travel, at least physically, I must travel in my mind. I must open up my horizons. Teaching and preaching and spreading the word and codifying, legislating. Maybe because now the Night Force, the collective, is so powerful. And maybe it's because of the time of the dark time of the year in the old cultures where all tribes and so on had to get together, live together, and sat down and talk things out. That some of this came to be. And now we come to the next glyph, the next 30 degrees on our travels, Capricorn. The last of the earth signs, the universal earth sign. In a sense, you see, we've come 9 months from Aries now to this point. Of course, this is going to be the shortest day of the year. This is the point in which, of course, the day force will begin. The seed, the Christ, the Christos, the new seed of light is born again. Just starting to come back. The Capricorn is the sign where structure, where status and perfection becomes all important. Not necessarily for individuals, but more seen in terms of, let's say, societies, government, how we govern our lives, what we work for and what we reach for, our ambition and the goals of what we started out to reach, our status in the world. It can translate out into things, since it's an earth sign, of perfect things, the best things. As Capricorn, I want the best. But Capricorn, the sign of Capricorn indicates the sea goat that climbs from the bottom of the sea to the highest mountain. Just as like Leo, who feels that is born to power, that part of ourselves that simply because I have a heart and a sense of ego, I can present it to the world. In Capricorn, that's taken now to a place where this is what I have worked for. This is attainment. This is crystallized structure. Government. The governments of the world are all Capricornian. In the myth of Christ in Rome, it was Capricorn, of course, was the sign of Rome. And Christ born the time of the Saturn, so-called the Saturnalia, the beginning of the turn of the light. In a sense, Capricorn is already looking forward, is already being drawn forward now into the growing of the life force, but clings very much to the structures that have been worked for all the way through the zodiac. So that in terms of governments, which is very interesting today, with all these planets in Capricorn, the old structures are breaking down, because once the structure is made, is realized the perfection, that is to say, here it was just earth, here it was manifesting now as discriminated earth, as raw stuff that is maybe merchandised. Here's the corporation of it all. Here's where we incorporate our life and say, I've really got it together. And as soon as I say that, boom, I've already planted the seed for my own destruction. That seed is the life force beginning again. Capricorn is a sign that works very, very hard to attain something, even though that attainment may have nothing to do with the world at large. Capricorn can be very much the hermit in ourselves, the one that goes into the desert, the one that strives to find ultimate reality. What I'm reaching for up here. They can be very self-effacing at that part of myself. Or, like famous Capricorns in our time, such as Richard Nixon. I may not have used personalities tonight. I'm going to move on. In a sense, the first 10 signs, the first 10 segments of our wheel, of our dharmas, each of these, in a sense, the dharma proclaiming itself as the dharma, as itself, as an expression, by tendency, now has reached as far as it can go in its development. And now the seed of its undoing is planted because of the eclipse is coming in. We come again to the next air sign, the opposite of Leo, Aquarius. The results of everything that have been so far gained in the individuating and collective process is now presented in the form of Aquarius as values about what we would say maybe is humanity. This is the glyph of the person, man or woman, holding a jug on the shoulder and pouring out. Sometimes it looks like, they say, the water bearer. But I've seen stars come out of it. It's been presented in many ways. That water is the knowledge or the wisdom of the experience of this whole trip. Being poured back, given back into the collective whole. But, as psychology, the Aquarian, you have to see that opposition to Leo as the center, if this is the sun. These are the waves that carry it out into the world. So whereas this might be the autocrat, in Aquarius, the opposite sign, we have the Democrat. Our democratic ideals. The Aquarius personality has a very small degree of self-assurance as an individual. So great is the collective consciousness in this particular part of itself, of our development. So that Aquarians will very often act out radically and eccentrically. Thinking there must be a new way. We've established all of this, and there is now a new way of looking at all of this and presenting it to the world. But because the psychology is so much part of the night, the whole collective, that the Aquarian acts out in a way that is often doesn't seem to quite fit in. Just as the Leo will act out socially, because it has a very weak, actually a very kind of thin, almost inferiority complex socially, so the Aquarian has kind of inferiority complex as an individual, and thus will act out radically in opposition to the what has been presented so far, in the sense that now, conceptually speaking, there must be a utopian, there must be some idealistic group association. Maybe Zen Buddhism. Maybe something, some place where I can get together with other people and try a new way of life. If their ideas are not accepted, they can become psychologically withdrawn and kind of the misanthrope of the zodiac, the grouch and grump. Aquarius is par excellence the loner in a crowd, because it needs collective. In fact, Aquarius really depends on all the social structures it wishes to undermine. But it is a day force beginning to pull it out and say, there's spring coming, there's a new way to do something, it's coming. I don't know what it is, but I feel it. This is the so-called Aquarian age. We've seen a lot of this happen in the 60s, where just eccentricity for its own sake, or acting out for its own sake, breaking down the old structure, saying to hell with authority. There's a negative side of Aquarius. We've seen the positive side in the idealistic thrust toward a society in which human beings all have a fair shake. We've just seen a great collective experience of Aquarius fall apart in Russia. Started with Aquarian ideals, breaking down the old aristocracy and establishing a life for all the people. But you see, it's fixed. It hangs on, like all the fixed signs, to some notion of what is right. It's very difficult for all the universal signs, in fact, it's very, very difficult to change their minds about anything, our psychology on this, because in some sense we feel that is that part of ourselves that is universe is where we're part of a force over which we have no control. We are the instruments of some greater power. And that's why people strong in so-called universal science, Aquarius through Pisces, will often send you to the wall for the best of reasons, to the rack, to save your soul.
It's fixed. Is Capricorn...
Capricorn is a cardinal. The changing points. Now, I got to move on here. 8:48. I'm just trying to get through this, and I haven't even got to a place where we can even begin to talk about this in terms of Buddhism. But you see, it's all interdependent. There's not one sign that exists without anything else, and the sign itself doesn't really exist. It has no self-existence.
There you go.
We now come to the last, so-called last, of our travels in this circle of becoming and change and growth and degeneration and so on. Pisces. Water. Water sign that is mutable. You see, it's interesting that before the equinoxes, we have the so-called yin signs, and before the solstices, we have the yang. So that in this axis, before the solstices, there's the need to go out and change and get things ready for the big, you know, spreading out. Whereas before the equinoxes, there is the tendency to eliminate, to discriminate, to do away with. We come to the last of all the signs, the double fishes, in which the axis of being has two sides of an old moon and a new moon looking in both directions at once. Or the double fishes symbolized by plunging deep into the unconscious, into the darkness, into the depths, and then coming back up to the light, and then going down again and coming back. Now the whole 12 have come home. Pisces, of course, is a time when, in a sense, the 12 sit down at the table with Christ before the whole 12 and have their last supper. This is the time in which everything dissolves away. This is the time, now in the zodiac, when the possibility that there is no ground at all, that there is no solid possibility of anything lasting, becomes absolutely paramount in the psyche of the Piscean thrust. All things dissolve away in the ocean. This is the time when all those beautiful leaves and all that growth of summer is now just detritus carried down into the sea as stuff, as mulch for the new growth. Pisces is a sign par excellence where we are aware most of all of the fact that there is no place that we can put our foot on. And because it's water, we are so aware of the suffering, maybe, of all of that has suffered through this, that in Pisces the feeling of compassion is born. Just the sympathy maybe for the group is born here. And a feeling of in Cancer, and a feeling of in water sign of Scorpio, of identification with social power. Now in Pisces, in the universal sign, there is no way to get a hold of anything. now maybe there's a possibility of understanding that there is no ground at all. That all of these are just places in which we understand ourselves as absolute, but at the same time, as I said before, everything else is the ground of our own being, and our own being is the ground of everything else, or in Pisces, the water of everything else. In the psyche of the Pisces, this makes it very sensitive to suffering in the world. Sometimes a Piscean nature can't stand it, so a sense of retreat, of retreating into isolation, into drugs, into alcohol, into all those trips that we want to, into the imagination, into flights of fancy. But it is here, you see, it is here where Christ, so-called, in the story, sits down, and all 12 of us all come together and have our Last Supper, kind of the crucifixion. And we see that we're all crucified on this cross. Eternal being, then becoming, and dying, and so on, it takes place. And then, of course, once more, as the day for us grows, Pisces, out of nothing, comes Aries once more, saying, "Hi. Oh, gee, I had this long dream that I was doing, going around this circle, doing something. God, what a great world! Let's start another point again, and it's over. Thus ad infinitum and ad nauseum." We go around and around with these 12 labors of Hercules, these 12, based on this idea of the earth turning on its axis in relation to the light, light and dark, now you see it, now you don't, now I have it, now I don't. Now, these are only attitudes, so to speak. We're only looking at this in terms of a progression, but now let's look at it this way, just for a minute. This is now the earth turning on its axis. And of course, in the middle is the still point, which I suppose is our real home ground, which has no sign. On the periphery out there is where we make all of our signs, but in here there's nothing. Can't name it. So we name it by all of these manifestations, these attitudes, these responses to the thrust of experience by tendency. So let's say right now, at this moment, this is the earth turning on its axis. Oops. And we're looking at the earth kind of cut through sideways, so that here is light and here is darkness. This is the east because we face the ecliptic this way. The rising sign, so to speak, is always over here on the left. So at this moment, where is the sun? Well, it's not here. Right? It's under the horizon. So the sign of Pisces is here, Virgo is here, and so on, all the way around. Scorpio, Sagittarius, Capricorn, Pisces, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo. So now I've taken those 12 signs and, you see, moved them in terms of this place and this time. So I'm just, well, tonight I'm only using the sun, but we have all 10 of the moving bodies, which is to say all these relationships is the actual moving of the planets to this particular place puts them in one of these areas. For example, right now we have a lot of stuff in Aquarius, so we have about 4 planets here right now. Neptune. Uranus, Mars, Mercury, Good night for Aquarius. And by the way, is the sign of astrology. So it's good night for astrology to get up and try to wax on this. What a mess.
Where's the Virgo?
That's our life. So what astrology is then is taking the planets, you see, the actual place of where the planets are in relationship to everything I've talked about. And what that means is you have to keep in mind that what I just discussed, that this is Aries in a sense, that this area and this area always has those characteristics of Aries, Taurus, that is, the beginning, the body, the mind, and so on. But now, different signs mean that that particular area will then express itself this way, a particular way of taking all of this and expressing itself. Thus we have right now the sun below the horizon in Pisces in the house of Virgo, the natural house of Virgo, so to speak. What astrology says, therefore, in a birth chart is this, that the moment you separate from, if you can start any point, but in the case of the individual, the moment that the child takes its first breath, the whole universe is there with it. The whole solar system. That you come into the world and the world comes in together with you in terms of relationships. Astrology was a very old way of looking at that and saying that by tendency, and maybe this is where some of the early ideas of karma came in, that you will experience your life according to these energies as planets, the heart, for example. The moon would be the gut. Oh, the moon, by the way, is in Aquarius also. A lot of stuff there, man. This whole area here of the life, the Virgo area, the area of discrimination, for example, in that person's life being born right now, this place, would play itself out according to those tendencies. Whether you believe that or not, accept that, that's something else. At least that is what astrology posits. Well, I've waxed a long time here, and we're right at exactly 10 o'clock. So, this is only the beginning. See, it presents a lot of interesting questions because there's certain places in the 12-fold chain of causation, for example, say the samskaras, or some of the tendencies, you can take astrology as just one of those sets of tendencies, and also see that that is the mode in which you are reacting to the force of experience by these tendencies in your life, just because you have a certain style, a certain stance. But not to make that a solid thing. I'm an Aquarian. It doesn't mean anything if I make it solid. I wish we could have some discussion, but alas. Lucky for you. So I'll finish. By rubbing this all up, which is unnatural. It's all gone. Never existed. It was all a dream. It was all a chimera. It was all a big dance. 12 sat down in one boat together, troubled voice and calm water. As the song goes. And I have a little ditty to end with. It goes like this. The stars in their courses have no destination. The train of events will arrive at no station. The inmost and ultimate self of us all is dancing on nothing and having a ball. Alan Watts.
Oh, thank you.
Beings are numberless, I gaze at them, division parting our soul, I lounge in them, Dharma gates are boundless, I lounge in them. Lord.